Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Obviously, having a few pints and then driving home is a complete no-no and totally illegal. But what is the law in relation to bicycles or e-bikes? What if you're plastered and in charge of a donkey? The law is different there. Conor Fahan is an independent motoring expert with CarZone. Conor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Hi.
So there's no limit on how much you can drink if you're riding a bicycle.
Well, there is law, but it's not the same as road traffic law. And we're very familiar with road traffic law. It's precisely defined. It's 50 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood. There's a limit. You can be breath tested for it. There's no debate. If you're north of the limit, you're guilty. No such law relates to the ordinary push bike. And I guess back in the day, in the 60s, you know, the phenomenon of drinking and driving was killing people. It was a social disaster. Now, it may be irresponsible to get on a bike and cycle at home, having leant it against the side of the pub, but the third party damage is not the same. So the law cracked down on alcohol and motorised vehicles, and it stayed fairly silent on the bicycle. But there is law. And what the law actually says is that you cannot be, you cannot ride a bicycle while being so drunk as to be impaired and unable to control it properly. That just needs a guard's opinion. So if a guard stops you and says you're too drunk to ride the bike, that guard can actually confiscate the bike. He can arrest you. And you can, in legal theory, ultimately wind up in court and you could wind up getting fined. Never happens. Literally never happens.
Yeah.
But that's what the law says. So the law is there to say that if you're too drunk to ride the bike safely, then that's an offence. But, you know, it's an invisible one on the statute books and it never, ever happens.
And the concern about third party, is that a nice way of saying, well, if you're on a bike and you're drunk, you'll just kill yourself rather than anyone else?
Exactly that. You're not going to kill a child. You're not going to cause a road traffic accident. And remember, back in the 60s and 70s, there was road carnage in Ireland. We worry about it today, and rightly so. We got about 180 road deaths per annum. It's too many. We want to bring the number down. Back in the early 70s, we had a third the number of cars doing a third the mileage. And we had, literally, we had three times the number of deaths. It topped out in the early 70s at about 470 road deaths per annum. And drink was behind loads of it. I mean, it still is.
Yeah.
So like everywhere else in Europe, we had to get serious about drinking and driving. Because if you're driving a car and you're drunk, there's almost no limit to the harm you can do. If you're on a bicycle, okay, theoretically, maybe you could hurt somebody else, but really it's yourself you're risking primarily.
Yeah. In other countries where there's perhaps more of a developed cycling culture, do they have laws around this thing?
They do, but it varies. I mean, some are very lenient. In Sweden, for example, there's no law. I mean, there's literally no law. It's sort of outside the scope. But there's still always alcohol laws. So, for example, you could be drunk and disorderly. So if you're drunk on your bicycle in Sweden, trying to get up a pedestrianised street or something like that, there is law that they can get you with, but nothing that says alcohol and cycling. The Netherlands is kind of the opposite. In their case, you actually have the same permitted blood alcohol level as there is for drivers. So in theory, it's the same law. But any Dutch person will tell you, and they cycle in droves. And it's just universally ignored because it's not a social problem. I mean, maybe you get some antisocial behaviour stuff where you can use that law to crack down, but it just isn't a problem. It's not killing people every bloody weekend, which drinking and driving still is.
Yeah. E-bikes and e-scooters.
Well, now, that's where it could get interesting, Sean, because at the moment, the government's attitude to e-bikes is probably a good one. They're treated exactly the same as bicycles. So all the same law, exactly the same. They use bike lanes. They can, you know, do this, that and the other, exactly as if they were a cyclist. No need for insurance, all that sort of stuff. And the reason for that is to encourage people to use them because they can triple the effective range of cycling. And, you know, it's all really, really good from traffic congestion and climate goals and public health and all that good stuff. Every reason to support it. But we may hit a problem in due course if e-bikes get really successful. You know, we might actually have to look at the law again if we think people really are starting to, you know, e-bike their way home 15 kilometres from a pub. You know, if that becomes a problem, we may have to make new law about it. But for right now, in the phase where we're encouraging e-bike use, they're treated exactly the same as bicycles, yeah, with the same sort of non-law when it comes to alcohol.
Even though they can go considerably faster than
they can go 20 kph with powered assistance, but you can pedal as well. So, and some of them are quite heavy. And if you're coming down a hill, coming down the hill of Howth, at 2 o'clock in the morning, way above the alcohol limit, that's a dangerous situation. And maybe we keep an eye on it. If it starts actually hurting people, then maybe the law needs to intervene. But it doesn't need the same size sledgehammer that you have to come at the drink driving stuff, because whatever debate we have about cyclists, it's an order of magnitude difference, the responsibility that drivers have, you know, moving a ton of metal around and potentially killing people.
Yeah, indeed. Having said all that, and I don't want to have a go at cyclists at all.
Oh, do let's.
But what laws do govern cyclists, and how often are people arrested for breaking those laws?
Well, arrested for breaking them, I can't think of a single case, unless there's other stuff going on. Sometimes it's part of a public order incident, for example, but just the ordinary cyclist breaking the rules, you never hear it. Even a good community guard might give you a verbal telling off or something like that. But the routine cyclist behaviours that frustrate people, weaving through traffic, mounting footpaths to avoid pedestrian lights, doing a whole host of things they shouldn't be doing. In essence, that's not policed very well. Now, let's not overstate the scale of the problem. Like, there's thousands and thousands of people who cycle in Dublin. In Dublin itself, and it's the same for the other metropolitan areas, there's about 12% of adults who use a bicycle regularly for a commuting journey. And that's a good number. I mean, that would put 600,000 more cars on the road if they didn't exist. So good to encourage it. Mm. Keep an eye on the bad behaviour. But for all the people who sort of are listening to us now saying, I see cyclists behaving terribly, you know, it's not really showing up in the meaningful statistics yet. Cyclists are about 8% of all road deaths. So that's serious. You know, that was 14 people last year. But there's various different ways in which cyclists can be killed on roads. Sometimes it's to do with road design. Sometimes it's to do with safe urban spaces. It's pretty rare that, you know, cyclists died because they were drunk. I guess it does happen. I'm sure it has happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It's even rarer, again, to say cyclist caused somebody else to die because they were drunk. And again, maybe that's happened. Maybe the truck swerved to avoid the drunken cyclist and wound up causing another. But they're very rare events. So you don't kind of use the heavy hand of the law for those very rare events.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about things, though, like if you're in a car... Yeah, you wouldn't think of going through a red light. If you're a cyclist,
You're a very good and immaculately behaved cyclist like myself. I mean, lots of cyclists do behave correctly, but they're very visible when they don't. It's quite a distinctive thing. If you're in the car waiting at the traffic lights, there could be 50 cyclists behaving, you know, perfectly. Mm. The one guy who weaves through will be the one that you notice. But again, it's the scale of the offence. The cyclist going through the junction, it's a reckless thing to do. You know, the truck going through the junction, the car going through the junction, the scale of risk is an order of magnitude more.
Yeah, but again, we're going back to that point, cyclists don't really get busted for going through red lights, it seems.
Yeah, well, they can in theory, according to our law. There's enough law there, if a guard sees a cyclist do it, there's enough law there for the guard to arrest the cyclist, confiscate the bike. In theory, a court could impose a fine of up to €2,000. Those are all provisions that physically exist in law. Do we actually want to do them? How heavy-handed do we want the Gardaí to be on a day-to-day basis on the streets? How big a problem is it really? Sometimes around matches, festivals, things like that, you might have an extra guard of presence. You get a concert in Marley Park, for example. You could well have drunken cyclists coming home from there, you know. On the one hand, great traffic solution. On the other hand, dangerous night, folks. Be sure you're being careful.
Yeah. But even if a guard sees someone acting recklessly on a bicycle and they whiz off past them,
not a lot he can do about it.
No, there's no reg plate or anything.
They also have to legally form an opinion that the cyclist was drunk before they can arrest on that basis. And, you know, that can be really, really difficult. In the older, weaker road traffic law, the guard had to form an opinion that the driver was drunk before he could stop the car. And that turned out to be legally useless, the amount of people who got off drink driving cases and stuff like that. But because that was such a serious issue and killed so many people, we made the law much, much tougher there. We could make the law much, much tougher on cyclists. I guess the open debate is, do we really need to? How big is the problem? Because we have the twin policy of wanting to promote cycling at every possible opportunity. So, you know, making people have insurance. Classic one is a helmet law. We don't have a helmet law. And lots of well-meaning safety people will say, it should be the law, can't cycle without a helmet. But we know in the real world from countries that have done it, the day you bring in that law, you put a massive dent in the number of people cycling. And that's,
really?
You know, that's the worst outcome. That's an unintended consequence and a bad outcome. So we don't do it.
Yeah. And because you mentioned something before we came on air about the line of desire for cyclists, that even if there are cycle lanes and road layouts to try to accommodate cyclists, they won't necessarily adhere to them.
They won't. And that's human nature. And there's no point wishing it was different. The cyclist wants to get where they want to go and they will follow what's called a line of desire. So classically at a roundabout, for example, the road designer might say, great idea, I'm going to step the crossing back by 20 yards and then it's much safer. And I want the cyclists to do the 20 yard diversion and cross there. They won't do it. And there's no point designing a system that expects them to do it. It's like expecting water to flow uphill. It's bad design. It's simply not going to do that. So you have to say, okay, here's the cyclist line of desire. How do we make that safer? And that's where kind of good design comes in. Yeah. And a lot of the frustrations where people see cyclists mount the footpath, if you are the cyclist, you kind of understand why they're doing it. Because, you know, it's an unrealistic diversion or you'd have to slow the bike to stop.
Yeah.
So, you know, good design tries to mitigate all of that.
Yeah. Do these laws or are there laws applicable to if you're riding a horse, you're drunk or a donkey home from the pub?
Yeah.
What's the situation there?
Well, there are general public order laws relating to alcohol and being drunk in charge. So you can be drunk in charge of a horse under laws that kind of long predate the combustion engine. And you can be drunk and disorderly, or you can commit any one of. So if you're picturing somebody, say, racing a sulky, or somebody who just, you know, is on a horse having been, I don't know, involved in a hunt or something like that, and is now on a public road, langered out of the mind, not controlling the horse properly. There isn't a defined blood alcohol level there. There's nothing we're going to prosecute the horse for. But the individual could well be guilty of a public order offence, which is probably the law that would be used.
Ah, right. OK. Yeah. Someone from Galway says, I'm 66. I have an electric scooter now. Because I was afraid of being caught drink driving. It's great. Go into town, have 8 pints of cider and have great fun flying home in my scooter. I don't need a license, insurance, tax, helmet, training or anything. So happy days. No law for me. And if you hit me, I'll sue you.
Ah, well, no, you won't. You see, that's worth making the point. Some people think that this means cyclists are off scot-free. But amongst other things, if you come off that scooter and you want to sue either the motorist you crashed into or the local authority or this pedestrian who stepped in front of you, your alcohol use will be a massive contributory negligence factor.
Yeah.
They're not quite getting away with it. But again, don't think of it as getting away with it. It's on the whole very, very good for the city every time somebody cycles instead of drives, for example. You know, same people give out if we've got a traffic jam on the M50 tomorrow, and facilitating cycling is like one of the things you do to improve all of that.
Liam says, I was recently in Italy and Slovenia. The discipline of motorists relative to cyclists and pedestrians is incredible. We could learn lessons from their road discipline.
Really? Ooh. Because I was also in Italy recently.
Italy isn't really famed for...
I was in Napoli last year and it's Darwinian. There don't seem to be any rules at all. I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to be in Athens. And you'll read in the law that motorcyclists in Greece must wear their helmets at all times. And you go, well, nobody seemed to tell anybody in Athens. It's just, you know, so sometimes we're not as bad as we think. We identify, despite ourselves, a little bit more Nordic than that. We actually have got quite good rules. We've got quite good behaviours. Overall, we've got a pretty good road safety record benchmarked against other Europeans. So we're not quite as bad as we think we are some of the time, even though we still get hammered and cycled home.
It does, a lad years ago used to go in for a few after he'd bought the milk churns to the creamery, tying his donkey to a pole outside. When he came out, he untied it and he rolled into the cart and fell asleep. Donkey headed off home with him. Says Wes.
Would you see that's autonomous driving?
That's what that is. Yeah. That's.
With the donkey in charge.
There used to be a bike with a small engine, and when the driver would see the guards, he would knock off the engine and pedal by them and start the engine up as soon as they were out of sight.
Yeah, there was. They've changed it a bit now, but this is around the legal definition of when it becomes a motorbike. You don't want it to be counted as a motorbike if it has a tiny little bit of power assistance. They call them mopeds. And there was a rule that they had to need the pedals to move them, otherwise they'd be counted as a motorbike. And they fell into a bit of a legal grey area. That's kind of gone now. The new e-scooter and e-bike rules have updated that. And there's rules around power assistance and all that. But it's about legally making the distinction. When does this stop being an assisted bike?
Yeah.
And start? You can't take a Harley Davidson into the bike lane, you know.
Yeah.
When does it become a motorbike? And there is a legal definition, yeah.
Connor, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today.
Sean.
That was Connor Faulkner, their independent motoring expert with carzone.ie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.